जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर सदहि श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेंत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद् भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासति गौर भक्तवृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधाकुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन मथुरा धाम की नवती मायापुर धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की गंगा माई यमुना माया की भक्ति देवी तुलसी महारानी की समवेद भक्तवृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदे ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द सिंपल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द सिंपल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द सिंपल डिवोटीज ఆల్ గురు శ్రీ గురు అని గౌరంగా ఆల్ గురు శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదకి జయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయే. బిఫోర్ రిసైటింగ్ ది శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం, విచ్ ఈస్ అ వెరీ మీన్స్ ఆఫ్ కాంక్వెస్ట్, వన్ షుడ్ ఆఫర్ రెస్పెక్ట్ఫుల్ ఒబేసెన్సెస్ ఆన్ టు ద పర్సనాలిటీ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ హెడ్ నారాయణ, on to Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, on to Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and on to Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Drishtvanyam cha moha patan అతత్తత్వవిదా ప్రజా బ్రహ్మపుత్రాన్ ఋతే భీత మేనిరే విశ్వసంప్లవం దృష్ట్వానాంశ్చ మహోపాతాన్ అతత్తత్వవిదా ప్రజా బ్రహ్మపుత్రానృతే భీత మేనిరే విశ్వసంప్లవం దృష్ట్వాన్యాం చ మహోపాతాన్ అతత్తత్వవిదా ప్రజా బ్రహ్మపుత్రానృతే భీత మేనిరే విశ్వసంప్లవం.
Vishwanyam cha mahopatam
माताजी दृष्टवानां च महोपादम् अतत्तत्त्वाविदा प्रजा ब्रह्मपुत्रारिते वीता मेरे विश्वसंप्लवम् दृष्टवानां च महोपादम् अतत्तत्त्वाविदा प्रजा Drishtva, having seen. Anyan, others. Cha, and. Maha, great. Utpatan, evil omens. Atatattvavida, not knowing the secret of the province. Prajaha, people. Brahmaputran, the sons of Brahma, the four Kumaras. Rite, except. Bitaha, being fearful. Menire, thought. Vishvasamplavam, the resolution of the universe. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Marking these and many other omens of evil times, everyone but the four sage sons of Brahma, who were aware of the fall of Jaya and Vijaya and of their birth as Diti's sons, was seized with fear. They did not know the secrets of these portents and thought that the dissolution of the universe was at hand. Purport. According to Bhagavad Gita, the 7th chapter, the laws of nature are so stringent that it is impossible for the living entity to surpass their enforcement. It is also explained that only those who are fully surrendered to Krishna in Krishna consciousness can be saved. We can learn from the description of the Srimad Bhagavatam that it is because of the birth of two great demons that there were so many natural disturbances. It is to be indirectly understood, as previously described, that when there are constant disturbances on the earth, that is an omen that some demonic people have been born or that demonic population has increased. In former days, there were only two demons, those born of Diti. Yet, there were so many disturbances. At the present day, especially in this age of Kali, these disturbances are always visible, which indicates that the demonic population has certainly increased. To check the increase of demonic population, the Vedic civilization enacted so many rules and regulations of social life, and the most important of which is the Garbhadana process for begetting good children. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna informed Krishna that if there is unwanted population, Varna Sankara, the entire world will appear to be hell. People are very anxious for peace in the world, but there are so many unwanted children born without the benefit of Garbhadana ceremony. Just like the demons born from Diti. Diti was so lusty that she forced her husband to copulate at the time which was inauspicious, and therefore the demons were born to create disturbances. In having sex life to beget children, one should observe the process for begetting nice children. If each and every householder in every family observes the Vedic system, then there are nice children, not demons. And automatically there is peace in the world. If we do not follow the regulations in the life for social tranquility, we cannot expect peace. Rather, we will have to undergo the stringent reactions of material, of natural laws. Thus and so forth. Om Ajnanati Mirandas Chajnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurulmitam Ena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrijatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Divam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitamscha Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarini Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpati Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Deve Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Krupa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasati Gaura Bhaktarunda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Thank you for everyone for coming here and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on the Bhagavatam. So today we are studying from Canto number 3, chapter 17, verse number 15. So the translation marking these and many other omens of evil times, everyone but the four sage sons of Brahma who were aware of the fall of Jaya and Vijaya and of their birth as Diti's sons was seized with fear. They did not know the secrets of these portents and thought that the dissolution of the universe was at hand. So in the previous verses, we have seen all the inauspicious effects seen in the nature before the birth of this demon, Hiranyaksha, in the womb of Diti. And in the current verse, basically Prabhupada talks about what is the reason for the birth of this demonic population. And the reason he points out is because these children are bigoted without following the Garbhadana process. And in this case also, because Diti, you know, afflicted with sex desire, she conceived the child during the evening, which is actually an inauspicious time. So it is also stated that everybody was afraid except the four Kumaras, because the four Kumaras know what's happening. The rest everybody were thinking that this is going to be like a dissolution of the universe, but the four Kumaras are well aware and they are not afraid. So, for the birth of these demons, I mean, we can see two reasons here. One is the curse of Jaya and Vijaya, which led to the birth of these demons. And also, the other reason we see is the Diti's actions, which led her to the untimely pregnancy, which led to the, you know, birth of these demons. So, now what exactly is the reason for the birth? I mean, is it the curse or is it the Diti's fault? Well, actually, both are the reasons. Because for any phenomenon to happen, there has to be a cause. And basically, the cause can be of two types. One cause is called as a limited cause or an immediate cause, and the other cause is called as an ultimate cause. So in this example, for example, when a potter wants to make a pot, right? Like when a potter wants to make a pot, so what is the immediate cause for a pot to manifest? It is the actions, you know. It is the actions of this potter, how he, you know, skillfully crafts this pot. That is the immediate cause. But what is the ultimate cause for the pot to manifest? It is a desire of the potter. So similarly, in this example, even though the ultimate cause for the birth of the Hiranyaksha is because of the curse by Jaya and Vijaya, the ultimate cause is because of the curse towards Jaya and Vijaya by the four Kumaras. That is the ultimate cause. And the immediate cause, what we can see here, is the Diti's pregnancy during the untimely event. And we can see that everyone was afraid except the four Kumaras, because the four Kumaras have the knowledge, they are aware of what's happening, so they're not afraid, they're not fearful. So we can see the cause for the fear is basically lack of knowledge. People who lack the knowledge, basically they are the one who, you know, are afraid. But people who know what's happening, they may not be as afraid as the people who are not like in complete knowledge. Because if you see, the fundamental problem of a living entity is basically ignorance or avidya. And from the ignorance comes the sense of I and mine, and from that comes the attachment, and from the attachment comes the aversion, and from the aversion comes the fear. So the root cause is avidya, and the fear is just a byproduct of such ignorance. As it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, avidya, from avidya comes asmita, from asmita comes raga, dvesha, and abhinivesha. But however, these four kumaras are actually in full knowledge, so they are not fearful. But of course, knowledge alone is not sufficient, because along with the knowledge, even also requires the mercy of the Lord. Without the mercy of the Lord, just the mere knowledge alone is not sufficient. Just like the Mayavadis, you know, the Mayavadis basically, they do not have any conception of surrendering to the Lord, because they do not consider like a personal feature of the Lord. So for them, there is no conception of surrender. And the way they deal with avidya is basically through knowledge, right? I mean, you are ignorant, so get the knowledge and then you are fine. So that is how the Mayavadis deal. Let's say, for example, like you see a rope and you mistake it for a snake, and that will cause you the fear. So what is the best way of taking out the fear? That knowledge, that be aware that that's not a rope, that's not a snake, that's just a simple rope. So this is the Mayavadis approach. Just to counteract avidya, they only, you know, propagate vidya, means that's where their jnana is. But however, we must understand that along with vidya, we also need the mercy of the Lord and the surrender, and for that one has to surrender. And one may be questioning that, you know, why we need to surrender, just vidya alone is sufficient. And the answer is given in Bhagavad Gita himself, the way Krishna says, Daivi esham hi gunamayi mamamaya duruttaya mam hi eva prapadyante mayam etan tarantipte. This divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered on to me can easily cross over it. So in this way, a living entity, is tiny living entity, does not have the strength for itself to overcome the three modes of nature. It does require the mercy of the Lord. It does require to surrender to the Lord. Only then the living entity will be able to transcend the three modes of nature. And even in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that the laws of nature are so stringent that it is impossible for the living entity to surpass their enforcement. So that is why one is required to fully surrender to Krishna consciousness to be saved. Along with the surrender, one also should have knowledge. That doesn't mean that, you know, surrender doesn't mean that you don't have knowledge. No, both are required, because surrender is also based on the knowledge. Surrender is not something which is like a blind faith. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, we can see the Arjuna, even though in the beginning, he had some, you know, preliminary, you know, faith in Krishna. But however, when he surrendered towards at the end, after listening to the entire Bhagavad Gita, he has surrendered. And that surrender is based on the knowledge. So in this way, surrender is not something, you know, without knowledge. Both are required, surrender and the knowledge. And in here, in this case, Kumaras are not only, you know, very knowledgeable, but they are also surrendered to the Supreme Lord, and they are, you know, they are favored by the Supreme Lord. Hence, when everybody was afraid and fearful, but, you know, the four Kumaras, they are not afraid, because they know what's happening. And the next thing what Prabhupada mentions here is about the Garbhadana Samskara, and how by not following the Garbhadana Samskara, it is leading to the birth of the demonic population in this world. Of course, in the age of Kali, you know, it's the age of Kali, so you are expected to see all the demonic population, and which is one of the ultimate reason why we see this demonic population in this current age. And actually, which is beyond our control. But however, what is in our control is that we can produce good children by following the prescribed purificatory methods. And that purificatory method is the Garbhadana Samskara. Because a sane person should worry. A sane person should worry before giving the birth to a child, that what kind of a children he is giving birth to. No, just there is no point of just giving, you know, producing children like cats and dogs, you know. Because one should consider what kind of an impact, you know, these children is producing will have on this world. Because I mean, we have enough demonic people out there, and we don't need to add some more to that quota by adding some more demonic people. So a sane person should be aware of that. That is why in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is one of the concern of Arjuna, that how, what happens to these, you know, wives when these soldiers die, they'll be exploited and they'll be, you know, Varnasankara, unwanted population. So now let's ask a question, what is Varnasankara? Is Varnasankara means just the, you know, someone who doesn't have a father? Like, you know, just Arjuna was telling that these wives will be exploited and, you know, will have unwanted population. Or, you know, or can we say that all the children of like single mothers are demonic? No, that would be a very narrow way of understanding, because sometimes we see that even the children of a single mother, actually they become to a pure devotees, just like Narada Muni in the Bhagavatam. We don't have much information about his father, but we can see how nice devotee, how pure devotee he is. So before trying to understand who is Varnasankara, let's try to understand what is Garbhadhana Samskara. Because Varnasankara is nothing but just a product of Garbhadhana Samskara, nothing more than that. So what is Garbhadhana Samskara? And generally, the Garbhadhana Samskara is understood as like a purificatory process, you know, as husband and wife undergo before they conceive to produce the children. Because this human life is meant for actually purification, right? Because when we have taken birth in the material world, that means that we are not liberated, right? So that is why we have taken this life. And this human life is meant for us to, you know, purify oneself and ultimately, you know, go back to Godhead and get liberated from this material world. That is the ultimate aim of the human life. But however, because of the one's past karmas, you know, different people have different inclinations. When by dovetailing all these inclinations as a service onto the Lord Vishnu, one can be purified. And especially the householders, basically, you know, they are given like a limited license for sense gratification. But however, by following the various ritualistic ceremonies, you know, it's an opportunity for them to purify their consciousness. And by purifying such consciousness, one will be able to, you know, give birth to a, you know, good Krishna conscious children. But those who do not follow such, you know, prescribed rules and regulation, they just give birth to like a demonic children, and who are nothing just but a burden on the earth. And, you know, the Vedic scriptures, you know, they give different purificatory processes. There are about like 16 in number. They're called as 16 samskaras. So the very first samskara, it begins with Garbhadhana samskara. The Garbhadhana samskara is something which, you know, a married couple, they perform even before they conceive. That is called as Garbhadhana samskara. And then the next one is Pumsavana samskara. And it is done in the second and the fourth month of the pregnancy. It is to ensure that all the, you know, the bodily parts of the fetus is properly, you know, developed. And then you have Simantonayana samskara, and that is done in the fourth or the fifth month of pregnancy, because during that time the mind of the fetus gets formed. So in order to make sure that there is no negative influence or negative effect on the mind of the fetus, they perform this Simantonayana samskara. The next is Jatakarma samskara, and this is done when the child is born. You know, when the child is born, you make a birth chart and make a prediction for the child. The next is Namakarna Samskara, done on the 11th day of the child's birth, after the child's birth. It's basically name-giving ceremony. And the next one is Nishkarana Samskara. That is the first time when the baby comes out of the house, because when the baby is born, it's in the house, it doesn't come out. When it comes for the first time to see the world, that is called as Nishkaramana Samskara. And the next one is Annaparasana Samskara. It's the first time when the baby eats a solid food, and it's usually done after the 6 months. And the next one is Karnaveda Samskara, and it is usually done in the sixth or the seventh month after the birth. It's basically just piercing the ears, you know. And the next one is Chuda Karana Samskara. So this is either done in the first year or in the third year, where you just shave the baby's first hair. That is called as Churanakarna Samskara. And then Vidyarambha Samskara. This is when the child begins the education, formal education process. And then you have Upanayana Samskara. This is when, you know, you start studying the Vedas, and, you know, you get Upanayana under a guru. And then once you study finishing the Vedas, then you come back home, and then that is called as Samvartana Samskara. Then you decide whether you want to marry or remain as a brahmachari. And if you decide to marry, then the next one is the Vivaha Samskara, that's a marriage. And once you marry, then you, along with your wife, you perform everyday fire rituals, you know, offering your and oblations to rishis, gods, parents, humankind, everybody. It's called as Panchagamana Samskara. And then you retire, Vanaprastha Samskara. And then you take sannyas. And then you leave the body. That's called as Antyeshi Samskara, the final samskara. So in this way, the Vedic, you know, scriptures give different purificatory process throughout the life of a human being, and it is something to see, and it is interesting to see that actually the first samskara, it begins even before the child is even conceived. So if someone is hearing for the first time all these 16 samskaras, I think the first impression they get is that this looks like some sort of, it's like a ritualistic ceremony, right? It's too many ritualistic ceremony, and do we really need to do all these ritualistic ceremonies, especially the devotees, you know? I mean, do we really need to do all these rituals, you know? Can't we just chant Hare Krishna and then just, you know, call it a day? Or, you know, do we really need to do these things? So, now we have to ask a question. I mean, what exactly are these things? I mean, are these things just some rituals, you know, where you just, you know, call a pujari, you know, just, you know, pay some $100 and then, you know, get it done in 1 hour and then go home, then continue with your life and then think that some miracle is going to happen because of this 1 hour puja, what you have done with the pujari. What is exactly is this, you know, samskaras? Is it just some ritualistic ceremony, or is there any deeper meaning, or is it having something more than a ritualistic ceremony? Because at least I can tell you from my personal experience that, you know, many people in India, you know, they do all the samskaras. They do all the 16 samskaras. But their children may not turn out to be devotees or what they expect to be. Right? And then at least I know many of my friends who are brahmanas, you know, they have done all the samskaras, but, you know, I see them eating meat, you know, intoxication. So what exactly went wrong? I mean, is the... And on the other hand, we can see that, you know, sometimes you can see that the children born in the West, you know, they might have not done any of the samskaras, but you can see the brahminical qualities in them, and they, you know, they eventually become the devotees. So we must try to understand what exactly is a Garbhadhana Samskara. Is it just a mere ritual, or is it having a deeper meaning, deeper science? The answer is that actually it is having a deeper science. It is not just mere rituals. You know, if you see some examples from the Bhagavatam, we can see the Prahlad Maharaj, you know. Prahlad Maharaj, even before he was born, actually, you know, Narada Muni was instructing, you know, his mother right in the womb itself. And even before the Narada Muni was born, actually he was, you know, he understood the entire Srimad Bhagavatam because Narada Muni was teaching the mother, and the Prahlad was actually hearing in the womb. And then we can also see Kapila Muni, who is, you know, born from the womb of Mother Devahuti and Kardam Muni. You know, Kardam Muni actually performed many austerities, you know, and tried to please Lord Vishnu, and then he was blessed with such a nice child of Kapila Muni. So in this way, what I'm trying to tell you is that the learning process actually begins from the womb itself. It is not something which you do it later. The samskaras are something which begins right even before the child is born. And the child hears, you know, the child learns right from the womb itself. Like one more example of Abhimanyu. You know, when Abhimanyu was there, you know, he was hearing, you know, about the Padma Vyuha from Arjuna, you know, when he was in the womb itself. But unfortunately, he only heard how to enter. He didn't hear how to exit. So he has to, you know, give up his life in the Padma Vyuha itself. Because generally, people think that, you know, when they give birth to a child, you know, they will teach them ABCD. They teach them basic language, and they'll teach them some basic comprehensive skills. And they will think that, you know, now the child is growing up, and now I will teach the child various values, and I will make him a good character person, and make him into a good devotee. So like that we have, you know, many parents have a lot of plans like this with the children. But many times it doesn't really work, because by the time the child is grown up, you will see that the child has already developed its character. He will exactly tell you what they like, what they don't like. They will tell you what movie they want to watch. You know, they'll tell you what food they like, what kind of friends they like to, you know, mingle with. So it looks like, you know, the child has already developed its individuality. So there's nothing much for us to do there. So because in the Ayurveda, it says that actually by the child reaches the age of 5 or 6, 90% of the development has actually happened. The mental development, the character of the child is already developed. Even before, you know, when the child loses its first teeth in the age of 5 or 6, by the time the 90% of the, you know, the character is already, you know, developed. So one may be wondering that, you know, how is this developed? You know, because neither I taught nor my wife taught all these things, but the child looks like he has learned everything by itself. That is because the samskaras are already developed. The samskaras are being, you know, developed right from the womb itself. And what you are seeing right now is just a manifestation of that samskaras, which are already developed. And that is why, you know, sometimes you may see that it's for the children, they learn bad things very easily or more quickly than the good things, right? Like, let's say you show them like some movie, like Ramayana, Mahabharata, and then you also show them the movie, some action thrillers, like some, you know, some shooting, killing, and all that stuff. The children will tend to be more attracted to the action thrillers than the, you know, Ramayana, Mahabharata. Why is it? Why does it happen so? It is not something unnatural. It is because the samskara is already there. The samskaras in the child has already developed. And what you are seeing by these movies, it is basically all the samskaras are just manifesting. So that is what happens, you know, because, you know, the education process, we think that it's going to start late, but actually the education process starts way in the womb itself. And you can't really do much after that. Even if you tell them, don't watch this movie, I mean, they're not going to listen to you. right? And then you can, as a parent, all we see is just merely we are just some kind of a facilitators and just provide a guidance, nothing more than that. And because the education process begins in the womb, and the greatest influence on the child's consciousness is actually given by the mother, because, you know, the child is in the mother's womb. And in the Manu, in the Manuha Samhitas, he states that actually for the child, the position of a mother is 1,000 times more than the position of a father. It is actually the mother's consciousness the child imbibes, you know. And that is why it is very, very much important that a pregnant woman during her pregnancy, you know, she is mentally well situated, you know, and she is happy. Because all the impressions on the mother's consciousness will have a direct impact on the child. You know, no matter whether you are a man or a woman, ultimately we are a product of a woman. And that is why it is also easy for actually a woman, for a woman to upbring a child compared to a man. That's why you will see many single mothers, but you don't see too many single fathers, right? So, you know, there was an example. You know, there was a single father. He was having a small baby with him, and then the baby was crying. And he was telling, Albert, keep quiet. Albert, keep quiet. Albert, keep quiet. The baby is crying. And, you know, the father was somewhere outside, and, you know, some random lady was just passing by, and then, you know, the ladies, naturally, they like children, and they came and said, Albert, what happened to you? Why are you crying? And the father said, the baby's name is not Albert. My name is Albert. He's just trying to calm himself. So in this way, we can see it's the mother. The mother plays a big role, you know, for the baby. Yeah, because the children, you know, the children's learning process, actually children learn through observing, not through oral instructions. You know, we can say so many things, but naturally the children, what they're doing is they're just observing. And whatever you are doing, they just imitate, they just, you know, they just replicate. So that's what, basically, when they see that their parents are nicely practicing bhakti, when their parents are doing nice, you know, where they are, you know, like cooperating with each other, the children, even though they may be very, very young, but they'll be observing all these things. And the child's character development is happening, especially from the age of 1 to 6, you know. 90% of the development is happening. So, in this way, we must understand that is a real Garbhadhana Samskara. Garbhadhana Samskara basically means it's not just the rituals, but there are two things. One is the rituals, which is explicitly stated. You know, this is one book written by Bharat Chandra Prabhu. He's a disciple of His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami. Rituals is just one thing, but the thing what it is not mentioned is the transformation of the consciousness, the purification of the consciousness that happens by following all these ritualistic ceremonies. Because once, you know, a person is purified by all following all these things, then he or she will be able to, you know, lead a life. Because when someone is giving birth, that means that, you know, he's bringing a new life into the world and he's acting as a guide. And the Bhagavatam states that, you know, do not be a father or a mother unless you can save the child from the clutches of, you know, birth and death. So that means that first of all, we have to be strong. The parents has to be strong, and their sadhana should be strong. Only then, you know, they'll be able to, you know, set a good example. But if they're not a good example, you know, there's nothing much to expect from the child, because children are just nothing but they're just imitating. And that is what is all these ritualistic ceremonies, the Garbhadhana Samskara, is about. Because especially the one who is in the Grihastha Ashram, there is some limited opportunity for sense gratification. And the biggest sense gratification opportunity a person has in the Grihastha Ashram is to fulfill his sex desire, which is not available in other ashrams, correct? But, you know, and all the, by following all these, you know, ritualistic ceremonies, basically one is expected to purify this sex desire so that one uses sex desire only for the sake of procreating a good children and not just, you know, use it, as per, you know, one's wishes. That's why even Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, that sex which is not against dharma, it is himself. So that is not bad, and because even the Vedas recommend so many rituals so that one can, you know, procreate good children. Give birth to a good children. So in this way, by doing all these samskaras, what happens is that the degrading effects, one will be saved from the degrading effects of the sex desire. Because sex desire is very strong, you know, out of all the desires, the sex desire is so strong and so powerful that it can even break the families, it can break the relationships, it can be a biggest factor for divorce, and it can lead the children, to be abandoned. So strong is the sex desire, and that is why we have so many purificatory processes so that one can, in a controlled way, use his sex desire in producing a good children, and then at the same time, not be degraded by this powerful force within one's body. Because sex desire is nothing but an aggravated rajoguna. It's just a mode of passion. It is just a contaminating. But however, by following all this purificatory process, one can purify oneself. So in that way, these things are very much important and not just a mere rituals, but one has to make sure that he also transforms and purifies his consciousness by following all these things. And then now let's say that what happens, let's say that someone is already born, the child is already born and he has not done any of these things. So what about them? There is a saying, it's very difficult to, imbibe a new samskaras for someone who is already grown up, There is a saying like, you cannot teach new tricks to an old dog, because the dog is too old to teach the new tricks. So all you can do is that, just treat them with love and respect, because people also learn through experiences, And it's not that everyone is very bad, Even though there may be some negative samskaras, there may be still some positive samskaras in everybody. Everybody has some good quality in them. And as Prabhupada mentioned, fan the spark, Like you see a small good quality in a person, and it's an expertise of a devotee to fan that spark, to make it into a big fire, and especially with the potency of bhakti, so that all the other negative, bad samskaras can also be destroyed. And that is where, even Prabhupada used to say that he used to shed, gallons of blood to make a single devotee. Why he has to shed a gallons of devotee, blood? That is because, it's a guru's responsibility, because all the bad samskaras which is already came from the birth, it's a guru, who takes the responsibility in cleansing them. Sometimes, you see that a guru, guru's position is very nice, everybody respects him, you give nice prasad, nice bedding, everything. But actually a guru has a thankless job. The guru has a thankless job and, an uncomfortable business of cleansing the dirty laundry of the disciples. Because it is the guru's responsibility to clean the anardas of the disciple. And there are two types of anardas. You have gross anardas, like as I mentioned in my previous class, sleep, distraction, disinterest in spiritual activities, tendency towards bad habits, taste for material enjoyment. These are gross. These are a little bit easy to clean. And then you have subtle anardas like pride, arrogance, ego. These are even more powerful to clean. And it's only a guru, who can clean this anardas. Of course, sometimes even a guru cannot clean if the disciple is not surrendered to the guru. So that is when, surrender becomes very much important, because without surrender, there cannot be any possibilities of cleansing this anardas, and there is no possibility of purification. Yeah. So, in this way, one can purify his, oneself, and then, also give birth to the Krishna conscious children. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.